Accession number 19638, reel 4.
Mr. Charles Jordan, reel 4.
At that stage, well, my only thoughts were self-preservation.
Would you describe what the scene was like in the water when you first jumped off the ship?
My own feelings was that having read and accounts of vessel sinking was to get away from the vessel as fast as I could, which I did. My impression of being in the water was hundreds of men frantically swimming away from the vessel, and some were even at that time were still jumping from the Lisbon Maria. I have the impression of hearing shots fired and swimming away as fast as I could.
What do you think the shots were?
The shots were the Navy, Japanese naval personnel and guards were actually shooting the prisoners in the water while they were trying to swim for safety. That went on for about a quarter of an hour. Then they must have received orders to cease fire, I think, because after that I didn't hear anything. As I say, it was a matter of self-preservation, just swimming for it.
Did you witness any panic at all?
No, there's no panic as such. There's no shouting or screaming for help in that respect. Everybody was intent of getting out and getting away. I suppose there was an initial bit of panic on the leaving of the after hole, because there was a great number of us trying to get through one small aperture, but there was no fighting to get through. One just went with the stream, or the crowd I should say, because we were so crushed up, and I can't recall anybody screaming for help or in any way. But I mean, I was fully occupied by my own survival.
During the time that you were in the water, did you have other men around you?
Yes, there were people. We were, by that time I'd swum well away from the vessel. We were all very, very scattered over quite a vast expanse of sea. Some were fortunate that got onto bits of wreckage. As I say, I eventually finished up on the Carly float, along with about 12 or 13 others.
What exactly is a Carly float?
Well, a Carly float, you imagine this table here. Around the perimeter of it, cork. No decking, it was just an oblong of cork joined together. So to get on it, you straddled it, and there was ropes that was on the outside you could hang on to. Where it must have broken loose from the deck, because they're usually stacked on the deck of these vessels as a alternative to lifeboats. But my main stabilizer was just a a square of cork. I don't know what it had broken away from or whether it was part of a life belt, but it was floating and I grabbed it, and that was, I could never have swum for 10 hours. I mean, I had to have something to assist me. And that was my lifesaver, really. And then eventually being helped onto the Carly float. Otherwise, I wouldn't have survived. And luckily, I was a good swimmer.
I was going to say that all your swimming regimen must have kept you in good stead.
Oh, yeah. I think it was meant to be. I learned myself to swim and love swimming, and that's why I survived.
You mentioned earlier about, I think you said you reached the island.
Well, I didn't actually. I got within about 200, some distance from the island, but close enough to see. Some people had swum, actually got onto the island.
But you were taken out to
but
see.
But I was carried away, undertow, I suppose, or current.
Could you describe that?
I think that was about the only time I panicked. That I just hung onto the float and hoped for the best.
Was it a powerful whip?
And somebody, yes it was rather, somebody was looking after me up there. That was, and a lot of others, of course.
You say a lot of others. How many would you assess?
Well, at least 800 of us. We could have all gone down on that vessel.
During the time you were in the water, did you see the ship actually go down?
I did not see that. I must admit, I did not see the vessel finally go under. I wasn't looking for it to go under. All I was intent on was getting away from that area. And thank God I was successful. Because any vessel, when it sinks, it creates a vortex. And even though you're in the water, you can be sucked down with it. So maybe it's a good thing I did swim away, well away from the vessel.
According to a report in the Birmingham Mail on September the 8th, 1945?
Yes, it would be, yeah.
45? There were 870 British drowned on the Lisbon Maru, but not one Japanese soldier, not one Japanese life was lost out of the 2,000 on board ship. Do you recall seeing any of the Japanese soldiers on the Lisbon Maru?
No. We didn't have much chance to anyhow. We just marched in onto the vessel, straight into the hold, which when a sufficient number was in the hold, it was battened down straight away. And on escaping from the hold, there wasn't a sign of a Japanese sailor or serviceman at all. So I don't know how many Japanese servicemen were on board that vessel at all.
How long were you on the ship? Do you have any awareness of how long you were on for?
No, I think it was approximately 2 days before the actual torpedoing, and the vessel sunk approximately 8 hours, 9 hours afterwards, I believe, or 10 hours anyhow. Yeah. Well, you were actually, as far as time goes, my recollection is we were on board for about 2 days before the actual torpedoing. And when I was released from the hold, one of the things I did notice was that there was not a Japanese crewman or serviceman on board. So, according to the article that I've since seen, it states that there were quite a number of Japanese troops on board, but I did not see them at all.
I just note the date here when the Lisbon Marie was torpedoed. It states October 1, 1942. So the hours that you were in the water, and it apparently happened at 8 a.m. You were fortunate to have been in the water during daytime.
I was very fortunate that I've never even thought about it. It's never sort of entered my mind on the circumstances while I was in the water. I've never given that a thought. And that is just one of those things. As I said before, somebody was looking after me from above.
Were you aware of feeling thirsty?
No, not really. All I was aware of was that I was surviving and that I were endeavouring to survive the actual experience. I can't recall. All I know that when we had the meal supplied by the Chinese villagers, that was sort of manna from heaven, that was. It was even better than what we were getting from our Japanese.
You had the extra sweet potato.
We had the extra sweet potatoes. That was the one extra thing, but it was wonderful. I do remember that.
It's now July the 7th, and it leaves about a fortnight between when we finished off the last tape, and we finished off where you'd spent 10 hours in the water. I wonder if you have any further thoughts about your experience there.
Nothing but the kindness of the villagers of the island that we were eventually finished up in. They were very kind and very helpful to us, fed us, but unfortunately they had to hand us over to the Japanese the next day.
Can you maybe go into more detail about the people who did rescue, how many there were?
I know they were fishermen because it was a fishing junk that picked us up. Regards numbers, the only people we saw, the only person we saw was the head man and maybe two or three others that brought food to us in the barn-like place where they stored their nets. That's all I can recall, actually, of the island. I wasn't in a very good state, actually, at that time.
Were you feeling ill?
I think I was, because I'd been in the water a long time, and I suspect that malnutrition was setting in and exposure.
Dehydration
from me, from my episode.
After you were rescued by the Chinese, would you describe what happened then?
Well, the numbers of men rescued by that particular village was a number of about 75 people. The Japanese authorities, naval personnel, came ashore and took us away from there the following day. We were shipped onto a naval vessel. I don't remember much about it, actually. The next thing I remember was being carried off the vessel and put in a Japanese hospital, along with 30 or 40 others. Nine of us survived that, walked out of the hospital, and we were then put on a train and taken to join comrades who'd gone before in Osaka, where I finished up for the remainder of my prisoner of war service.
What sort of treatment did you receive in the hospital?
Very basic. I think it was just a matter of the person that was there. I think I must have a very strong survival gene in me, because we lost quite a few people going in there. Maybe I was very fortunate, but the treatment was nothing really. They didn't sort of administer pills and things like that. We just had the general food that they issued, and that was all.
Were you in a hospital bed?
We were laid on pallets on the floor in the hospital. I remember that. The toilet facilities weren't all that grand. I remember that too, because that was part of my trouble. But other than that, I don't remember much about it.
Can you remember what nationality the doctors were who treated you?
I assume they were Japanese. I mean, I can't even recall seeing them. All I remember being carried in there and eventually walking out there with the ashes of the people that died there. We carried them in little caskets. I don't know what happened to those ashes. They were taken off us when we got back to the camp.
Do you know who carried you into the hospital? Do you know?
Well, that was done by the Japanese. They went up on stretchers from the naval vessel. That's all I can recall, being carried, stretchered off along the gangplank, and finish up in the hospital, and that's all I recall of it, really.
Must have been very upsetting for you and others who had to carry those ashes out.
Well, by that time we didn't think much about it. We were just so pleased that we were alive to be able to do it, and I can't even recall any of their names, because we were a mixed bag. But
not necessarily men that you knew well, even.
No, because there were different regiments on the vessel, and most of my own regiment actually did not survive the sinking, because we were in the afterhold.
Do you know how many?
Approximately 400, because there were 600 in the hold, and I have been told since only 200 of us survived that sinking.
So after you left the hospital, where did you go then? You got on the train, you say?
Well, we put on the train under guard, and we travelled quite a long time. I don't know where we travelled from. All I remember is getting off at a station and finally arriving in Osaka prisoner of war camp.
How did it feel entering that building, and what was it like?
It was very, very difficult to either describe or explain it, really. It was a matter of fact that the small number of us eventually reunited with 400 other British troops in that camp. That's all I can recall then. And of course, once you got into the camp, you made your own particular friendship, usually with the person that laid next to you, or if he was in the same regiment.
So you can't really recapture what feelings you had?
No, not really. I don't think I had any feelings, just that thankfulness that I'd met up with some of my own people rather than being subject to the discipline of the Japanese over a small number of us, a matter of 9 people.
Were there other, at the time when you entered the building, were there other prisoners there already?
Oh yes, because they'd arrived approximately a week before us, because we were in the hospital approximately a week. They were more or less settled in by then, and we just followed their footsteps, more or less. They initiated into the ways of the camp.
Did the building have a name?
Not that I recall. All I recall is that we call it the Osaka. I think it has got a name, but I think it was just a number. There were several prisoner war camps in Osaka and Kobe, but I can't recall the number of hours. All I know is in a prisoner war camp, and that was it.
Do you think it was outside of the town?
Oh, it was, because when we marched to and from our workplaces, we actually marched more or less about a mile and a half into the town, and then onto the practically onto the docks. I didn't see much of the docks. I wasn't on that kind of a party. I was on stevedoring in warehouses, carrying 85 kilo sacks of sugar, rice, soya beans, that type of item, and occasionally working what they call their steel yard, where we were loaded up with 5 or 6 or 15 foot length welding bars to carry and put on to railway trucks for destination. I assume there was a shipyard, I don't know.
Was that work to become a routine for you?
Oh yes, it was very, very much so. We had to do it 7 days a week. All we had at the workplace, we worked till midday. We had a break then, and usually the hancho, which is the foreman of the warehouses, gave us a small amount of cooked rice. We had half an hour for that, and then we continued working. We do that every day, right through our prisoner war life.
How was your state of health initially?
The state of my health at that period. I think, like all the rest of the prisoners, after about a month of that, our bodies had got accustomed to the type of ration we got. We were very hard and very hardened. We learned how to carry these heavy loads without undue strain on the body, the easiest way to do it. Incidentally, we didn't wear clothing while we were carrying. We wore a I assume what you would call a loincloth, which they called I can't recall the correct name, but it was just a strip of cloth which we tied with tapes around our waist, and then the flap was going the rest of the way. And if you're working on sugar, which we predominantly did, we finished the day just treacle from head to foot.
So it was raw sugar,
Yes. There's mostly sugar and rice and beans that we transported.
What sort of beans?
Soybeans. That was something we couldn't smuggle into camp because of its texture and its bulkiness. But sugar and sometimes a little rice, we were able to steal and smuggle back into camp. After surviving searches at the place of work and on returning to the guard room of the prison camp.
Was it very hard physical work?
Very physical, very hard. But towards the end, we just endured it. I think that is the word.
You were all in it together.
Oh, yes, and everybody was very, very supportive amongst ourselves. We had no official British officers to lead us in any way. All we had was a Royal RSM, Regimental Sergeant Major of the Royal Scots. He was the senior non-commissioned officer in the camp. Where the officers went, I do not know.
So did he automatically resume, you know, an official role?
He was more or less, he did not go out on working parties, but he was the go-between on our behalf with the Japanese authorities. I don't think it was a very easy task by any means. He got exactly the same rations as us. Anything we smuggled back into the camp was not for our own personal use, but was for the men that were sick in the camp, because they got reduced rations if they weren't working. But everything was geared to the whole, not to any individual needs.
What time would your day start?
We'd have, I suppose, the equivalent of Japanese roll call in the morning. We'd have a bowl of rice. That was our day's ration, a morning's ration, flavoured with seaweed. No other flavour. Sometimes we had a little bit of soya flour that we could spread on the rice. Then we were assembled in work parties. A guard would march us through to our workplace. And when you got there, you were allocated whatever tasks that would be done at that workplace.
So
the guard stayed with you all day. Well, you were supposed to. We didn't see much of him. I think he sort of wandered off somewhere out of the way, because there's no way we could escape or do anything there. And we got to know certain guards, and we used to fill their loot bags in the hope that he would be lenient with us when he searched us before going back to camp. But you had to be very, very careful about that.